Grandma told us after supper that you want me to come to the city and live with you until things get better. Did she tell you that Papa's been out of work for a long time and no one asked Mama to make dresses anymore? We all cried, even Papa. But then Mama made us laugh with her stories about your chasing her up trees when you were both little. Did you really do that? I'm small, but strong, and I'll help you all I can. However, Grandma said to finish my schoolwork before doing anything else. Your niece, Lydia Grace Finch. September 3rd, 1935. Dear Uncle Jim, I'm mailing this from the train station. I forgot to tell you in the last letter three important things that I'm too shy to say to your face. I know a lot about gardening, but nothing about baking. I'm anxious to learn to bake, but is there any place to plant seeds? I like to be called Lydia Grace, just like Grandma. Your niece, Lydia Grace Finch. On the train, September 4th, 1935. Dear Mama, I feel so pretty in your dress that you made over for me. I hope you don't miss it too much. Dear Papa, I haven't forgotten what you said about recognizing Uncle Jim. Just look for Mama's face with a big nose and a mustache, and I promise not to tell him. Does he have a sense of humor? And dearest Grandma, thanks for the seeds. The train is rocking me to sleep, and every time I doze off, I dream of gardens. Love to all, Lydia Grace. She is all alone in the train station. September 5th, 1935. Dear Mama, Papa, and Grandma, I'm so excited. There are window boxes here. They look as if they've been waiting for me, so now we'll both wait for spring. And Grandma, the sun shines down on the corner where I live and work. Love to all, Lydia Grace. P.S. Uncle Jim doesn't smile. December 25th, 1935. Dear Mama, Papa, and Grandma, I adore the seed catalogs you sent for Christmas, and Grandma, thank you for all the bulbs. I hope you received my drawings. I wrote a long poem for Uncle Jim. He didn't smile, but I think he liked it. He read it aloud and put it in his shirt pocket and patted it. Love to all, Lydia Grace. February 12th, 1936. Dearest Grandma, thank you again for those bulbs you sent at Christmas. You should see them now. I really like Ed and Emma Beach, Uncle Jim's friends who work here. When I first arrived, Emma told me she'd show me how to knead bread if I would teach her the Latin names of all the flowers I know. Now, just half a year later, I'm kneading bread and she's speaking Latin. More good news, we have a store cat named Otis, who at this very moment is sleeping on the foot of my bed. Love to all, Lydia Grace. P.S., Uncle Jim isn't smiling yet, but I'm hoping for a smile soon. March 5th, 1936. Dear Mama, Papa, and Grandma, I've discovered a secret place. You can't imagine how wonderful it is. No one knows about it but Otis. I have great plans. Thank you for all the letters. I'll try to write more, but I'm really busy planting all your seeds in cracked teacups and bent cake pans. And Grandma, you should smell the good dirt I'm bringing home from a vacant lot down the street. Love to all, Lydia Grace. There's the secret place. April 27, 1936. Dearest Grandma, all the seeds and roots are sprouting. I can hear you saying, April showers, bring May flowers. Emma and I are sprucing up the bakery, and I'm playing a great trick on Uncle Jim. He sees me reading my mail, planting seeds in the window boxes, going to school, doing my homework, sweeping the floor. But he never sees me working in my secret place. Love to all, Lydia Grace. P.S., I'm planning on a big smile from Uncle Jim in the near future. May 27th, 1936. Dear Mama, Papa, and Grandma, you should have heard Emma laugh today when I opened your letter and dirt fell out on the sidewalk. Thank you for all the baby plants. They survived the trip in the big envelope. More about Emma. She's helping me with the secret place. Hurrah! Love to all. Lydia Grace. P.S. I saw Uncle Jim almost smile today. The store was full, well, almost full of customers. June 27, 1936. Dear Grandma, flowers are blooming all over the place. I'm also growing radishes, onions, and three kinds of lettuce in the window boxes. Some neighbors have brought containers for me to fill with flowers, and a few customers even give me plants from their gardens this spring. They don't call me Lydia Grace anymore. They call me the gardener. Love to all, Lydia Grace. P.S. I'm sure Uncle Jim will smile soon. I'm almost ready to show him the secret place. July 4th, 1936. Dearest Mama, Papa, and Grandma, I am bursting with happiness. The entire city seems so beautiful, especially this morning. The secret place is ready for Uncle Jim. At noon, the store will close for the holiday, and then we'll bring him up to the roof. I tried to remember everything you've taught me about beauty. Love to all, Lydia Grace. P.S. I'm already imagining Uncle Jim's smile. Oh my, can you see that? Uncle Jim's not smiling, but let's see what happens. July 11th, 1936. Dear Mama, Papa, and Grandma, my heart is pounding so hard, I'm sure the customers can hear it downstairs. At lunch today, Uncle Jim put the clothes sign on the door and told Ed and Emma and me to go upstairs and wait. He appeared with the most amazing cake I have ever seen, covered with flowers. I truly believe that cake equals 1,000 smiles. And then he took your letter out of his pocket with the news of Papa's job. I'm coming home. Love to all. See you soon. Lydia Grace. P.S. Grandma, I've given all of my plants to Emma. I can't wait to help you in your garden again. We gardeners never retire. And there she is saying goodbye. And the very last picture, she's back home. This morning, let us give thanks for a bouquet of people. We give thanks for children like tulips and iris. They multiply around us, making the world even more filled with color, beauty, and new life. May we bless them as they replant themselves ever further from us, knowing that they need their own space to grow. We give thanks for generous friends, as constant in bloom as echinacea, and whose gifts lift up our body and spirit. We give thanks for feisty friends, as indomitable as geraniums, and for contentious friends, who, like bittersweet and ivy, hold on and never let go, who can never be gotten rid of. For crotchety friends, as prickly as rose bushes, their beauty a secret that is only discovered through careful gardening. For surprising friends, who at first glance seem dour and then blossom into joy as quickly as forsythia. For funny friends, silly as snapdragons. For serious friends, complex as chrysanthemums. For comfortable friends, their gentle presence as soothing as the sweet smell of lilacs. For stormy weather friends who stand by us in hard times, like Lily of the Valley that cannot be deterred by shade or shadow. For old friends nodding like sunflowers in the evening time, for young friends coming on fast as flocks, and for new friends who keep us open-minded and open-hearted, curious, expanding, our horizons. For friends as unpretentious as dogwood, as persistent as pisandria, as steadfast as azalea, and who, like snowdrops, can be counted on to see you through the winter and remind you that spring always comes. And finally, for forget-me-not friends, gone but never forgotten, their beauty lives on in our memories and in our hearts. For this bouquet of flowers, who brighten our lives, each in their own way, we give thanks. And now, thanks to Candy, you'll see some of these friends in the year in pictures. Well, they say a picture is worth a thousand words, right? There's some people there that maybe if you don't know, you might think, oh, I'm going to look for that person, and I'm going to reach out and see if I can figure out and get to know some new folks during the coming year. And if you're not in the pictures now, you will be next time around. So thanks, everybody, for a wonderful year full of blessings. I hope you all feel really warm and fuzzy inside. I certainly do. But I do have a few words to share with you this morning in reflection on our time together. But first, I want to share some words from a colleague, Reverend David Bumbaugh, who writes, "Flowers are strangely independent creatures." You can kind of see that from the photographs, right? "Most flowers represent natural powers not under our control. The daisies come despite us and stake their claim in parking lots and ballparks and hidden corners. Even some of the tame flowers occasionally burst through generations of conditioning, and a prim tulip suddenly appears, all alone, under a tree where the tulip has no business being. Or a clump of iris makes a home in a forest preserve, and you wonder how it got there. The flowers, you see, do not bloom for us. They don't care whether or not we see them. They grow and bloom because they are full of life, and the world would be incomplete without the riot of blossoms which express nature's voiceless joy in life." Nature's voiceless joy. In many ways, we're like flowers. We too are strangely independent creatures, and I can't help but think this is often a common characterization of Unitarian Universalists. Strangely independent creatures having a reputation for being free thinkers. We resist domestication, breaking out of neatly cultivated beds to pop up all over the place at will. We grow and bloom because we are full of life that must be expressed. We celebrate the fact that each of us is born with unique gifts. We affirm the worth and dignity of every person. And those gifts are part of the world. The world would be incomplete without the riot of our blossoms, which express nature's joy in life. And after serving as your minister this year, I know that each one of you has unique gifts to share. It was really fun as you all came in this morning. I don't think there's anyone here today that I at least don't know your name, which is really amazing and a wonderful feeling for me. You each have such unique gifts to share with one another and with the world. It's truly been a blessing to get to know each one of you. And just the iceberg, tip of the iceberg, I'm sure, of the gifts that you have to share. David Bumbaugh continues, "What nature has done for flowers, nature has done for us. We too are products of nature's extravagance. Each of us is unique. Mingled together, interacting, we do not become less unique, but rather find our uniqueness heightened. Here in this place, here in this human community, we find the full dimensions of our individuality. the richer meaning of our existence, the profound delight of this world and of our existence in it. Our growth is enhanced by our relationships with one another. None of us would be who we are without being in relationship with each other. The flower ceremony is a ritual that celebrates the beauty of our unity in diversity, who we are together, all of the ways we blossom because we choose to grow together. Our beauty is enhanced when we share our gifts with one another. But we all know, I'm sure have had at least inklings, that this community thing can be a tricky business. We ask a lot of ourselves and one another by being in community together. It's not always easy to find that groove where we mesh, because we are unique and we bring unique gifts to communities. Communities can provide a sense of safety and belonging, sanctuary from the world that can be harsh and unkind. I've often heard people say that discovering Unitarian Universalism felt like coming home, and that they value having a place to gather with like-minded people. But when you really think about it, are you guys all really like-minded? Do you always agree on everything? Do you even really know what you all think about what's going on in this place, much less in the world? That feeling of security is a really good thing, right? You feel safe, you feel secure. And yet maybe that's not the whole truth. There's probably more to it than that, because there's so much we don't know unless we're always reaching out to one another, always asking questions, always curious about what we don't know. Feeling safe and secure isn't quite enough, is it? It can kind of get us to a place where complacent, that feeling of safety and security, like we know when there's always more to know, right? We know that we're finite. I believe that we're called to be even more expansive. Our tradition calls us to community. It calls us to affirm the worth and dignity of the individual. But it calls us to more than that. It calls us to be open and curious, so that we're always on a journey, our gaze outward, to see the beauty in the flowers growing in the field beyond our own, to see that we're part of an immense bouquet of staggering variety, nuanced variety. Transcending our limited ways of seeing and being is how we grow into the bedrock of our faith, a faith capable, captured by the 16th century Unitarian theologian Francis David, when he said, "We need not think alike to love alike. We need not think alike to love alike." I believe that religious community has something powerful to offer when it encourages people to put love and connection ahead of free-thinking independence. This is a place where we're called to express our unique gifts, but more than that, we're called to express it in a way where we can be in community and in relationship with one another that expresses the values that we share, affirming the worth and dignity of all people. Trying to develop a climate of trust, trying to value the gifts of each person, both those that we know well and both that we are meeting for the first time. When we do, we discover that, as my colleague Victoria Safford says, everyone is needed. Everyone's experience is cherished as sacred text, and no one's experience of living or loving can be comprehensive, because each of us holds clues the others need about how to live with dignity and joy as a human being. And none of us knows enough about that yet to be considered whole. The truth is, we can't really be whole without each other. We're finite and limited. It's the very nature of being human. Now, I'm getting ready to head off to Ministry Days in Kansas City, Missouri, and one of the highlights will be hearing what Olaf has to say about having been a Unitarian Universalist minister for 50 years. There's a service that honors ministry among colleagues and peers where we invite ministers who have been in service 25 and 50 years to talk about their experience in the ministry, and Olaf Nuyar is going to be our 50-year honoree this year. And I haven't been to Ministry Days for a very long time, but last year I watched this worship service online. I was able to see it through the miracle of modern technology. And one colleague that I really admire's name is Meg Riley. She was a 25-year honoree last year. And some of you may know of her. She's the minister of the Church of the Larger Fellowship. And in her talk, which she was talking about how to grow love in her reflection last year. And I was really struck by what she said. She told a story about an African-American colleague at the UUA who called her up and wanted to tell her about an experience of racism that she had experienced in a UU congregation. And Meg's first response was to minimize the experience, saying, "Surely they didn't mean it that way," she said. Her friend stopped her, and she had a choice. She could choose to continue to try to rationalize the experience from a place of discomfort and white privilege, or she could choose to just be a friend, simply listening and supporting this woman's experience, and that perhaps even learning something from that, from somebody whose perspective was different from her own. And Meg went on to say, and to use this image of a train, you know, with the switch on the tracks, you can go one way or the other. And she said that we can choose to switch tracks, and we can choose to switch tracks to make the train go another way. We can choose to stay within our comfort zone, in that place of security, in that way of we think we know, that need to protect ourselves. Or we can choose to try something different. We can choose to embrace our discomfort and just listen and hear what's being said. We can choose to support, and we can choose to learn. And in that learning is when we grow. That's when we grow together, when we really allow ourselves to connect with one another rather than staying in that place of safety and security. And in the Buddhist tradition, there's this the space between the in-breath and the out-breath. When you focus on your breathing in meditation, you breathe in and you breathe out. But there's really a space in between where you're just present. And in that space is where you can make that choice. If you allow yourself to find those spaces between your automatic response, you can make a choice to do something different. It's not easy because we're all conditioned, right? So we're conditioned to just breathe out and keep going. But in that space between the in-breath and the out-breath, we can choose to switch tracks from our comfort place to a place that might not be quite as comfortable, but where we're capable of actually connecting with somebody in a new way. And I think it's a powerful image. And it's actually a very powerful thing to be able to choose. The idea can really help us choose friendship, listening, learning, and growing together in love. And so, as we revel in the beauty of the flowers that make up our bouquet this morning, I encourage you to imagine befriending flowers in fields beyond your knowing, beyond our knowing, beyond our ways of knowing, in the service of our growth and connection, like these sunflowers in Mary Oliver's poem. Come with me into the field of sunflowers. Their faces are burnished discs. Their dry spines creak like ship's masts. Their green leaves so heavy and many fill all day with the sticky sugars of the sun. Come with me to visit the sunflowers. They're shy, but want to be friends. They have wonderful stories of when they were young, the important weather, the wandering crows. Don't be afraid to ask them questions. Their bright faces will follow the sun, will listen, and all those rows of seeds, each one a new life. Each one a new life, a new possibility, a new opportunity for growth. May it be so. So now it's time for the Flower Festival. The flower ceremony was created by the Reverend Norbert Chopek, who after spending several years in the United States returned to his native country in 1921 to found the Unitarian Church in Prague, Czechoslovakia, which soon became the largest Unitarian church in the world. With the Flower Festival, Dr. Chopek hoped to provide his congregation with a new way of looking at religious community, one that celebrated religious freedom. He wanted to replace traditional Christian symbols and rituals, which had been used to oppress the Czechs through state-enforced Roman Catholicism, with new ones that would help them honor and celebrate the gifts of their life in community. And so it probably wasn't called Flower Communion, at least not at that time, although the word is a lovely word. To come together in communion, community, is a lovely idea, but it probably wasn't called Flower Communion at the time. The cup and the cross were replaced by the vase, representing community, and flowers representing the beauty of diversity. Every person brought a flower to church and placed it in a communal vase. At the end of the service, each person left with a different flower. The significance of the flower ceremony is that no two flowers are alike. No two people are alike, yet each has a contribution to make. And together, the different flowers form a beautiful bouquet. Our common bouquet would not be the same without the unique addition of each individual flower, and thus it is with this church community. It would not be the same without each and every one of you. When the Nazis took control of Prague in 1940, they found Dr. Chopek's gospel of inherent worth and dignity, the beauty of every person, to be, quote unquote, too dangerous for the Reich for him to be allowed to live. Dr. Chopek was sent to the Nazi concentration camp at Dachau, where he was killed the next year. His fellow prisoners cited him for enormous courage in the face of death and for his belief until the end that truth conquers all evil. It is an honor for us to carry forward Dr. Chopek's memory in our flower ceremony today. And so while we're singing the next hymn, I'm going to invite a procession of the flowers. And I think Jamie has some helpers that are going to bring our flowers forward. I'm going to invite you to stay seated as we sing hymn number 64. Oh, give us pleasure in the flowers today. And I think we'll just sing two verses.